Episode 653 of The Next Step, Prime All the Way, December 10th, 2020.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into The Next Step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vodskin's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Yes, it's really remarkable. I mean, that's the word you have to use. Like, you have to remark about it when you think about how these dots connect. When you can get a lung machine from a place in Ohio to a small little bed in Yerevan. Like, what are those dots that connect one to the other? You know, we talk about a small world. You know, it's a small world. How thing. A couple of weeks ago, I did a funeral, and as I'm reading the biography, I come across a name that happens to be my grandmother's brother. And here I am standing in a cemetery in Hollywood reading a biography that was handed to me by another person my age. And we're looking at each other and realizing that somewhere along the way, we're connected. And in a genocide that took place 105 years ago, my grandmother, her brother were separated from one another. They ended up in orphanages. One goes to France, one goes to America, and now their ancestors have come and 105 years later are talking to one another and exchanging notes about that life. I mean, it's remarkable. That's the word. It's remarkable that, you know, we're able to connect. And it's the same way. All of a sudden, we see this truck come, 53-foot truck. It comes from Ohio. Yeah, Ohio, where medical supplies, medical instruments, machinery, lung, what do they call, respirators, have been donated and they are being transferred. And we're greeting this truck here in Los Angeles, and these things are being packed up. They're going to be sent out to Armenia, and some guy in Armenia who is suffering from COVID is going to get this respirator that comes from a place called Ohio. It's remarkable. I mean, think about it. You know, there was a small world theory. This was, I'd say it has to be the late 60s, early 70s. I remember my dad telling me about it, but I learned about it in college in one of my earlier psychology classes. And I'll never forget it. It basically said that in this world, there are 5 points of separation between any two people. Find two people in this world, and you could find 5 people and connect them. And I've heard that recently, as far as like 10 years ago, that degree of separation has come down to 2 or 3 people. And you think about that. You think about the people that you know, and think about anybody else in the world, how you know somebody who knows somebody who knows that person. That's it. 3 people. And I've tried this. I sit there sometimes and I see somebody, I go, wow, there's no way I could know that guy in 3 steps. And sure enough, you think about, I know so-and-so who happens to know so-and-so who happens to know that person. And I guess the more people you know, I guess the odds get better and better. So I guess it has something, it's a function of your age to live long enough and you'll get to know everybody in the world. I don't know about that. But you get the idea. Right? And so this was a small world theory. That's what it was called, if I remember right. We'll look it up. Yeah, we'll put it on our show notes. But it's fascinating. It's fascinating. And I thought about it this week as we secured all these medical supplies thanks to the initiative of an incredible, incredible doctor, someone I've known for the last 10 years very closely, my physician too. And she went out there and she found these donations. Donations from Ohio that ended up being put in a 53-foot semi-truck and hauled across the country. Now, for those of you outside of America, Ohio, you got to remember, it's like heartland. It's like right in the middle. A few years ago, we did a wedding out that way. And we had a chance to actually drive through Ohio. We went a day earlier, 2 days earlier, or a few days afterwards. I can't remember. But we ended up driving through Ohio. And it's fascinating because for us, where Los Angeles and California are basically home base for us, and then to go out to someplace like that, it's just, again, we'll use the word remarkable, fascinating, because you're driving and you see corn, for instance, right? You see miles and miles and miles of corn growing. And this is the heartland of America. This is where corn is coming up, you know, and then you see the different types of corn. I mean, we're used to going to the store and you pick up you go into the produce aisle and you find the different apples and you find different oranges and you find corn, you know, next to the other vegetables. But imagine just like miles and miles and miles of seeing these corns. And then you get into a gas station to buy gas and then you find out that the gas is being subsidized by this corn, because gas was, if I remember right, it was like about half price of what we pay in California. And it was just, it was a lesson to be learned. And I think the more you get to travel, the more opportunities you get to travel, the more you start understanding that really it is a rather small world, and the connections that we have are intricate. They're very important that those connections are really celebrated. That's the word. Yeah, you know, when you have these kind of phenomena, you got to celebrate. Now, last year, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. And I shared with you a story that came from Jim Lovell. Now, Jim Lovell never made it to the moon. He was on Apollo 13, that ill-fated craft that, you know, they even ended up making a Tom Hanks movie about. But Jim Lovell was the first person to be on, the first person to leave the orbit of the Earth and orbit the moon. And there is a beautiful story that he tells, and I'll make a note to see if we could put the picture up on our show notes. Do check it out. It's an iconic picture. It's showing in the foreground the moon's surface, and in the distance you see the Earth rise. So just as we see a moon rise, this is the Earth rising. And I remember Jim Lovell somewhere along the way made the comment that everything we know, every person we have ever met, every person we will ever meet, every bit of history that we know is on that little blue dot in the sky. I believe he referred to it as a blue marble. And he would put his thumb up and it would cover that little area. I mean, imagine that. Everything that we know in human history, everything is behind that little finger. And just tonight, tomorrow night, all the way up until December 21st, you have an opportunity to kind of see something really, really special up in the sky. Because the two planets, Jupiter and Saturn, are getting closer and closer in what's being called the Christmas star. They haven't been this close in 800 years. So you get to look straight up here in California. It's in the southwestern sky. So you'll have to figure out where it is in your sky. But Jupiter and Saturn align themselves. So you like look up there and you see it. And they're getting closer and closer until they make like one object, bright object. And as you start looking out there and you realize that, you know, the distance between Jupiter and Saturn is the same distance between us and the sun. Imagine that. And these are these huge astronomical bodies that are hovering, that are being held together by gravity. And you start realizing that all the problems that we talk about and we have here on Earth are so, so small and insignificant compared to what's out there in the universe. And it's that humility. Once you have that humility, once you understand yourself as part of this cosmos, you gain that humility and you're able to look out. And you start understanding that the yes, I'm talking Armenian, the yes, the ego has to be suppressed if you want to really see beauty. Because once you lose yourself, once you lose that ego, you're able to see and understand those connections. And so when we look at a connection of this incredible doctor deciding that she's going to do something for Armenia and then goes out there and finds these medical supplies in a place like Ohio and has them shipped across the country to California and from California on a plane to a place on the other side of the planet called Yerevan and there to a bed of a sick person struggling after the war. You look at that and you say that, well, really, it is something that is possible. And this is where we talk about moving mountains, having faith to move mountains. This is it. Because you start understanding that it is all possible once we can put ourselves to one side, once we can suppress the ego. If we can get out of the way, you have the possibilities for those miracles. And yes, it is remarkable. It is just as remarkable as all the magic feats you see there. The idea that from Ohio all the way to Yerevan, these breathing machines have arrived or will arrive, wheelchairs, walkers, all kinds of things. Thanks to one person who sits there and says, I need to do something to help, extending herself, himself, whoever that person may be in this world, whatever you do, you have that potential. It's understanding that it comes through service, in service and caring for others. So, like I said, it was remarkable for me to be part of that. I was just honored that Inner Shoes had a small, insignificant part to play in that. But when I say insignificant, it is to allude to that idea that the ego has to go away. But once you say that insignificant, you realize that that part too was very essential to put everything together. Every little piece comes together and the dots start connecting. Now that little story that I told you about Jim Lovell and the dot, it was kind of interesting because the other night in our Bible study, we are studying the book of Jesus' Son. Now this is a book by Nerses Shnorhali, and we got to one little section in this a prayer. Yes, it's a 4,000 verse prayer by Nerses Shnorhali written in the 12th century. And it was interesting because it just hit me as we were looking at the Bible. During the Bible study, we were reading this prayer, and I came to this passage right off the top. It goes, let me just share with you, okay? Jesus' Son, only begotten of the Father. And he goes on, he goes, by whom all we who live were made, all those that mortal eyes behold, and those the mind can comprehend, and have they intellect or not, all living things that grow, and all lifeless objects that move not, these now all offer praise to thee and to thy loving Father too. And this is exactly what Jim Lovell said, you know, some 800 years later from the Apollo 8 capsule, saying everything is out there. And you look at it, and it's the same thing. Nelson Schnorrally, looking inward, and he's saying these things, right? Everything is connected. All living things that grow, all lifeless objects that move not, everything is connected. Remarkable, yes, that is the word that we will use today. We are 2 weeks away from Christmas, and we are getting ready, of course, for the Christmas holidays, and a very, very difficult one this year, because of everything that happened in 2020. I was talking earlier to my good friend Gor Mkhitaryan, artist and musician extraordinaire. And I was just very fascinated that he had such an optimistic outlook for despite everything that's happened. And it was refreshing, really, to hear somebody talking that with that optimism. And I have to be honest with you, the people that I've been hanging with lately, there's a lot of optimism. I'm saying I got to be honest with you because the tendency is to be negative. I know the talk has been about like, oh, what a horrible, horrible year 2020 is. And I really enjoy that optimism because to me, as bad as it is, I realize you can't live with that negativity. A few weeks ago when we baptized our grandson, to me, I mean, that made 2020 a positive year, right? I mean, is there anything more positive that after a war that smells of genocide, where Armenians are trying to be killed, that in an Armenian church, an Armenian priest is baptizing his grandson and putting the Holy Miron on his senses, and a new Armenian Christian is born? Is there anything more positive than that? Pointing to a miracle. And I shared with you just on the Thanksgiving weekend that a couple came before the holy altar, and that negativity of 2020 became a positive event, because is there anything greater than that? A new Armenian family in the shadow of the war. The war is over. Armenians have been killed. It looks like we have lost. And yet, an Armenian family comes and receives the blessings of the church, is united in holy matrimony, a new kingdom, an Armenian kingdom is born. Yeah, you can look at the negativity that's all around, but it doesn't get you anywhere, does it? And hopelessness will only breed more hopelessness. And really, the positivity that we look in life is not fabricated. It's very real. It's just a matter of being able to articulate it as such. Like, I'm not making this up. I'm not saying that, oh, yeah, it's a great year. It is a great year. There can't be anything greater than that. That in the midst of all this ugliness, some beauty comes out. There's a Tull song that I love. It's one of my favorites. It's called Jack in the Green. And it's about these elf-like creatures that are charged with all things living, right? And, you know, I think there's Jack Frost too, right? Jack Frost. This is Jack in the Green. And so, you know, this idea that the green comes out. And there's a beautiful verse in there. It says that with these changing times, motorways and power lines, will they keep us apart? Like the motorways, the power lines, and all of technology taking us forward. Will it keep us apart from the beauty of nature? And then he takes a look and he says, I don't think so. I saw some grass growing through the pavement today. And it's so beautiful. I mean, I'm sure you've looked at tons and tons of what Joni Mitchell describes as they've paved paradise and they put up a parking lot. Yes, we've seen all that all around us. the paved paradise and the big parking lots. But can you look in, focus in on a small little crack and say, I don't think so. I saw some grass growing through the pavement today. And today that's that optimism that we need, because it is a very, very, very difficult year. And this is what Christians are called to do. And there's no other reason for it except that we have seen the ultimate grass growing through the pavements. We have seen the resurrection following the crucifixion. We have seen life that has come after death. And so we have it within us to be able to proclaim that goodness, that victory. And so when I say that I'm sitting here in Los Angeles and we're welcoming a truck that has brought over all kinds of medical equipment, and this is going to get over to Armenia, and the remarkability of those dots that are being connected between all these different points and how everything is working in harmony and in unison. Yes, it is awesome. It is remarkable. Okay, gave you a lot of things to think about for right now, exciting things, and shared with you some experiences that we went through. I'm going to continue on the other side of the song of the week. I stumbled another one. This was truly a stumble, because yesterday I was in such a mood. It was a solid day of writing different releases and programs and putting together all kinds of, it was just a really, really long day. And I started off the day with a meditation with Tchaikovsky. It was a violin concerto I had never heard. Oh, just brought me to tears. And it got me into this mood, into this funk where I just put on a bunch of music and just was going, writing and working and working and working. And then I took a little break somewhere in the evening and just stumbled upon an artist named Arpi Alto. And actually, I didn't even know she was Armenian. I mean, I didn't know what her name was. I was just listening to her beautiful voice. She was doing some covers. And all of a sudden, I looked over at her name, Arpi Alto. I go, oh, that's kind of unusual. And then I found a song called Sohag. I said, oh, yes, she has to be an Arpi. Enjoy.
Arim Sohag Toh pardes merin Tagherov kumber Tagisacherin Baits nalalis e Du sohak miga
It's not all he said.
dari kaja sirt basi ko yer ka kutse im boltin lese basen vore ka boltis lareca
Arpi alto, doing Arim Sohag, come to me, my nightingale. Wow, is that beautiful? It's a very popular song among Armenians. Actually, her repertoire, this was the only thing that I found of that was Armenian on her repertoire. She does quite a bit of pop music, covers. So I'll have a link on today's show notes. Do check out her music. A wonderful talent, a special discovery for me because she came and I discovered her on a day that I really needed this. I really, really needed this. And I hope that it did something for you too. Arim Sohag by Arpi Alto is the artist. And as I tell you all the time, do support these artists that we feature and that you care for. If they do something for you, let them know too by supporting their music. Arpi Alto, check out our show notes. Couple weeks away from Christmas, getting ready for the Christmas holiday, an unusual one this year, considering all that's happened, and especially for us as Armenians with a war that is still kind of in shock. Like, what happened? Within 2 months, you know, a war started, a war ended, casualties, wasn't supposed to end up like this, and more questions. And I think that the Turks probably did the biggest number in just really disuniting a unified force. That's the biggest damage, I think, that came out of this war, of course. And the children that were lost, children by way of the soldiers, these young men and women. This Sunday, we're going to be commemorating these young soldiers. We have an event called the Children's Memorial. And this is an event that actually was started back in the mid-1990s by then-President Bill Clinton. The idea was to commemorate and remember the children who had passed away. And it is a worldwide event in that people in their time zones will get out, and at 7 o'clock, according to their time, 7 p.m., they will go out and light a candle. And by doing so, if you are one of these children up in heaven and looking at the earth as a globe, yeah, isn't that appropriate? We just spoke about Jim Lovell looking at the earth. Well, imagine looking and seeing this wave of light going around the earth if enough people stood up and shared a candle that night. And I know it's pretty, it's romantic to think about this, but it's also important because It lets you know that we as a world can come together over some things that are truly bothersome, tragic, and shouldn't be. Kids should not die. It is unnatural. The natural order of life and progression is that you grow up and you bury your parents. Unnatural is when parents have to bury their children. So unnatural is it that it's tragic, and in that tragedy we come together to find and support one another through this children's memorial. So that's going to be taking place this Sunday evening, and we name it after a young lady who lost her life tragically over 20 years ago, Katya Hamparyan. And I never forget that first year that we did this. She was the only one on the list. We did it in memory of her, this children's memorial. And through the years, we've expanded. Tragically, we've added names. People have brought their loved ones, their names. And we remember, because it's my commitment to this group, that I will remember their names. So I add people that in my ministry that I've had to the horrible task of doing these funerals. I got stuck for a moment because, as I said, horrible task. I realize how valuable of a task it is also to bring solace. And sometimes it's not about what you say, it's just being there. And I'm always very thankful that of this ministry for the fact that we can be there in people's good times as well as bad times. And so we have this list, and this year we're going to be adding the names of those children who lost their lives during war. And I want to share with you in this second portion this idea of what is our faith, because we are at a point right now where people are questioning in a very unusual manner. And it runs the gamut. And being a priest and having studied religion, theology, these things interest me. Not to a point of analysis for the sake of analysis, but for us to really awaken to our spirituality of who we are, what we are, and what we're doing. Because I noticed that, you know, there's been a lot of people who make up a theology that will account for the deficit in our cosmology, in the way we look at the world, the way we look at our universe. Why do these unusual and horrible things happen? As I said a few minutes ago, why do these unnatural things happen? A couple weeks ago, was it, or maybe last week, I received a letter in the regular mail. It was addressed to me, and it was very unusual because the envelope was addressed exactly the way they were addressed in the Soviet Union. For those of you who do not remember the Soviet Union, nor the envelopes that were addressed, the way it would work is if you're here, I don't know how it is in other countries, I'll tell you, in America, the envelope, when you send it through the post, is addressed to a person, the next line has their street name, the next line has maybe if there's an apartment number on it, the next line has their city, their state, and if it's airmail, you might want to put the country on it. In the Soviet times, and I don't know if it still continues in Armenia today, but you would put the country first. Yeah, the top line would be USSR. The next line would be Armenia, the country. Next line would be the city, Yerevan. Next line would be the street, Yoterort, or Mesrob Mashtots. And no, there was no Mesrob Mashtots back then. Excuse me, this was, yes, so Lenin, okay. And Bohoda Boulevard. And the final line would be the person's name. Let's say Margos Artunyan, okay? So that's how it would look, you know. The order was exactly the opposite. And sociologically, you could maybe point to what was important during that. The state was important, not the individual. Whereas in our case, the individual is primary, and he's at the top of that list, right? It says something to you sociologically, if you want to maybe look at it from that vantage point. But a couple weeks ago, I received a letter exactly like that, but the return address was again backwards, but it was from just down the street here in Glendale, California. So it actually said USA, Glendale, California, the street name, and then the not the person's name, but it said Kingdom Hall. Which, if you are alert and astute and know what that means, it means it's coming to you from the Jehovah's Witness. Okay, so I'm getting a letter from the Jehovah's Witness. Inside the envelope are two brochures, one written in English. It says, "Who Really Controls the World?" And there are pictures of, like, they look like ministers that, you know, like, I guess they're pointing to them as the bad people. And the Armenian one is called "Inch Kirke Asvazashunche Tsez Hamar." What is the Bible for you? And it's written in Armenian and all kinds of explanations here that really are kind of distortive because they tell you about things that I don't know where you get, where you come to this. So anyway, let me just share with you, for instance, what it says, and you'll understand where I'm going with this. Can we really believe what the Bible says? Yes, for at least three reasons. Satan's rulership is doomed. Jehovah is determined to bring Satan's control over mankind to an end. He promises to bring to nothing the devil and undo all the damage that Satan has caused. Sounds like pretty wild, huh? So for some reason up until now, God has not done that, but at some point he's going to do that. Okay, next one. God has chosen Jesus Christ to rule the world. Jesus is the complete opposite of this world's present cruel, selfish ruler. Concerning Jesus' kingship, God promises he will have pity on the lowly and the poorly from oppression and the violence he has. He will rescue them. Very nice. And the third reason why you have to believe what the Bible says, God cannot lie. The Bible plainly states it is impossible for God to lie. When Jehovah promises to do something, it is as good as done. The ruler of this world will be cast out. Now, this sounds really wonderful. It sounds beautiful. But here's the deal. This always works. You could say whatever you want. See, when you're talking about religion, you could say, because they could always justify it on the grand scheme of things. They could say, well, in the big picture, you have to live long enough. And people don't live long enough. People don't live long enough. Like, you know, you said, like, well, for the next 100 years, you know. Okay, like, most people don't make it. I mean, it's not that 100 years is hard to do, but by the time you read this, by the time you start questioning these things, what are you, 25, 30, 40, 50 years old? Add to that the 100 years, and now you're talking about, well, now that's some serious time. And there's no way of proving, disproving these things, because just people don't last that long. And one of the reasons why I object to all of this stuff is because it defies logic. Just common logic, common sense. And really what it does is it keeps people suppressed because it doesn't allow them to question what is essential. Like, think about it. It's telling you the Bible is right. Why? Because the Bible tells you it's right. I mean, what is that supposed to mean? The Bible is right because it tells you it's right. Because in the Bible it's written that God does not lie. Why doesn't God lie? Because the Bible tells you that it doesn't lie. Therefore, God doesn't lie. Well, do you understand what I'm saying? It's like what we're experiencing in the world. It's the reasoning and the rationale of this world. When the politician gets up and he throws out a bunch of lies and you know that they're lying, and then you turn to them and you say, well, why should I believe you? Because I said it's true. Oh yeah, let's believe it then, right? I mean, like, you can't use your material to justify yourself. It doesn't make sense, right? I'm not lying because I'm telling you I'm not lying. And you, who would accept that? But you're asked to accept that when it comes to articles of faith, when it comes to religion. And sadly, we buy into this. A lot of people buy into this. Whatever it is, it just, I mean, like, I'm picking on Jehovah's Witness, but you can go on to anybody, and they get up and they make these big pronouncements, and you have the right You have the right to ask the question, what do you mean? Because when you look at it, I mean, this is what the, this is the beauty of what Christianity is about. It kind of like fits in for everybody. So this is also one of the tragedies. People are making up stories. They go on. Like, for instance, right now, people in their certain faith communities, and I live very close to one. I've seen it inside of our church. People who say that, yeah, they say that we don't need to wear masks. Why? Because we believe, and Jesus will not let us get the COVID-19. Now, that's really good, right? You say that, oh, yeah, these people really believe. But on the other hand, you can also argue, thou shalt not test your Lord your God. Isn't that kind of like a test? Hey, Jesus, I believe in you. I know I'm not going to have COVID-19. Isn't that like kind of like testing and saying, go ahead, let's see. Are you really with me? Or is COVID more powerful than? What are you talking about? This is a virus that's going around. And it's attacking people. And they're questioning, you know, just the sheer logic of a virus. And not only questioning it, but they're testing it. We don't need to wear masks. What I'm saying is that you're able to justify anything. And somebody who takes the scripture and grinds it through their system, it will come out their way. And so just as I said earlier, I talked about like we have to get out of the way. The ego has to get out of the way so that you can see the beauty of the universe and you could connect. In the same way, the religious system that suppresses you has to get out of the way. This is why Gregory of Datev said it so beautifully. In his reflection about the Lord's Prayer, the Our Father, he makes a point of saying that our, by saying not my Father, but by saying our Father, that word itself takes away hatred and establishes love. Think about that for a moment, okay? If I were to say my Father, different from your Father, right? And if your Father is different than mine, I have room to argue with you. My Father is more powerful than your Father. My Father could beat up your Father and attribute it now to God. My God is more powerful than your. My God can overcome and beat up your God. But by saying our Father, you've taken away that element of hatred. He goes on to say, you've taken away the hatred and established love. Our takes away pride and promotes humility. That's right, it's ours. It's not mine. It's our Father. He says, our shows equality of everyone. Something that we know, right? We're all God's children. All of us. God makes his son go over the good and the bad. We are all his children. And God doesn't differentiate, but we differentiate. And Datevatsi says, because by our, the word our, everyone becomes a partner of another's prayer. Wow. So when we say our Father, I'm now a partner of your prayer, and you are a partner in my prayer. And we start thinking in terms of our community, of our world. Yes, that word that people have made into an ugly word lately was a word that we subscribe to, and I still do. Globalism. Meaning that we have to think globally as a people. As a humanity of who we are on this planet. And you can have pride in the idea that you are different and you are unique, but not pride in the sense that you are better than anyone else. We have to get with the program that we are all members of the human race, of the human species. Now, I say this because when you think about it, what is Christmas? Jesus Christ was born, and at his birth, it was heralded peace on earth, goodwill toward men, toward humans, one each to the other. And through that birth, also, we understood that the chosenness of a people is gone too. Like I was saying earlier, you justify it by the thing. Why are the Jews considered the chosen people? Because their book tells you that they are the chosen people. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. You can't say that my book tells me I'm the chosen person. No, and that's what Christ came to show. That we all belong to this family, the human family. And that's why he says when his mother and his brothers show up and they say, your mother and your brothers are outside. And he says, who is my mother? Who are my brothers? The people who hear my word and do it. Who hear God's call and do God's will. In other words, we're all people. We're all brothers, sisters. Get over this idea that somehow there's superiority built into the human race. Get over the idea that I'm right and you're wrong. There are different ways of perceiving things. And I want to leave you with that comment right now, that different perception. And it's an easy one for you to do. It's an exercise that I'm going to leave you with. During this season, we have Christmas trees. And if you don't do the Christmas tree thing in your house, you should. It's a beautiful tradition. It really changes the mood. But if you don't and you're not going to do it, go outside and look at a tree, okay? This is a small little exercise. You put ornaments on it. And I want you to look at that tree from just one place. Just go sit someplace and look at it. And try to describe the different ornaments that you see. Red one, blue one, square, round, whatever it is. Picture, animal shape, whatever it is. Describe it. And then either ask somebody in your family, friend, or you yourself. Go to another position. Have somebody stand in another position on that tree and describe what they see. And they may see some of the same ornaments you do, but they will see it from different angles, right? So much so that they may not even see some of them. And they might say on the tree is only blue ornaments. While you're from your vantage point, you saw red ornaments on there too. From their vantage point, they may see a disc that is in such a way that it might look flat from their area. They say it's flat. Everyone who describes that tree will describe it according to their vantage point, where they are. A small little child will be looking up. A tall man will be looking down. Everyone is looking at that Christmas tree from a unique vantage point and will describe it as such. And I'm challenging you to think that in this world, that's how we look at this world. Each of us from our own vantage point. Some are poor. Some are hungry. Some are well fed. Some are doing okay. Some are looking up from above. They're looking down on others. Others are looking up with an expectation for help, for security. Everyone has a unique vantage point. They read the world as such, and that's where their beliefs and faith come in to support their look at the world. Let's accept that. Let's accept that we all come into this world uniquely created by God. Each of us has a unique vantage point from which we perceive that world. And let's celebrate that vantage point. In other words, celebrate our differences. Now that becomes remarkable. Here's Susie to make her announcement. I'll be back in a couple moments. moments, okay?
Susie here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you, all of you, for all of your support. Thank you for getting involved in the toy drive. Our toy drive continues on for a couple more weeks. You have an option to purchase toys for children of domestic violence. And that you could do through Amazon, and they'll be delivered. And then you have to do that in the next week, right? And Amazon will deliver it in time for Christmas. And we have opportunities to give toys for the children of war in Armenia. That is a monetary donation. You go and you check out our website, you make a donation, and make sure that it says Toys for Armenia, and be sure that we will get it to Armenia in time for the new year. Yeah, isn't that wild? Yeah, that we just break up Santa Claus's work a little bit extra, because Santa Claus makes the rounds here on December 24th on the eve. In Armenia, it's on December 31st. So he's got like a five-day window, you know, to get the act together and get the sleighs over to Ararat and then down onto Yerevan and the rest of Armenia. So it's really wild. I don't know how it works, but it does. It does work. It needs your support, okay? Pray for it, and we look forward to your donations. There'll be a link on today's show notes with all kinds of instructions on what to do. That's the place to start. Go look at the show notes, everything I talked about, a lot of links that we care about, things that we're looking forward to, you'll find in the show notes. I want to take this opportunity to tell you that next few weeks we have Christmas, New Year's, a lot of things changing. A lot of things going on. Take advantage of this time by celebrating the beauty of life around you. And I know it's difficult. We've gone through a very emotionally charged roller coaster type of year. It's coming to an end. It's also a time to celebrate the goodness that we found. And I think one of the greatest things that we did find is the ability to communicate and talk with one another at a different level. Something that we've enjoyed here on The Next Step, having friends throughout the world. I think most of the world is now figuring out that, hey, it's not too bad that we get to use these virtual environments. In all honesty, I really miss hugging people, but it is what it is for right now. This Sunday, I'm at the St. Leon Armenian Cathedral in Burbank, celebrating the Divine Liturgy. I just heard that it might be an outdoor, but in any case, it should be streamed, so you can catch it on the Western Diocese Facebook page. On behalf of everyone who put today's show together, on behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, and the wonderful people at InHisShoes who really are my backbone and support, all of the wonderful people who bring together The Next Step, this is Father Vazquez inviting you to join us again next week when we will take The Next Step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with The Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, The Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.